Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence. If you've got your Bibles, let's go ahead and find John chapter 7 and 8 this morning. We're going to continue our journey through John's Gospel. Tell you, Pastor Adam, I'm thoroughly impressed that you could beat the bass and play the banjo at the same time. I would be lucky to walk and chew gum at the same time. So once again,
I need a kazoo and I'll be a
hey, we'll work on that this week, right? We'll work on that this week. All right, thank you. That was awesome. All right, so we left off last week in John 7:40, and so that's where we'll pick up today. Is in 7:40, but we're really going to hang on to verse 8:12. So we're going to go from 7:40 through 7:52. I'm going to just kind of, we're only going to read one verse in that passage. I'm going to kind of tell you what happens. And then we're going to jump to 8:12, and that's where we're going to hang out, 8:12 and the few verses beyond that. I know in your outline I got very adventurous and thought we might get through verse 30 today. We'll see. It's going to be how long the pastor hangs around a verse or two, okay? So we may end up at verse 30, we may not. So we'll just kind of roll with it and see how far we get. So we left Jesus off last week. He was talking to the crowds where Jesus used the first of two major symbolic events that happened at the Feast of Booths, and that was the water ceremony. And we saw how Jesus told the crowds there in the temple at this very heightened moment that he was the one that would produce or give to them living water, or that they could come and drink from him, and anyone who was thirsty, he would give them water, and it would well up in them and produce rivers of living water, like we read today in our memory verse. That was what we talked about last week. Well, after that event in verse 40, the crowds are completely divided along several fronts as to who Jesus is. And in verses 7:40 through 52, John kind of gives us insight into how the crowd's thinking. Some people think that Jesus is the prophet. Now, there was this kind of unique belief in that time that a major prophet would arise before the Messiah. So some people thought that he was this end times prophet. Let me put it in that way. Other people thought that he was absolutely the Christ. Like, this is the guy. Others said, no, that can't be him because he was from Galilee. Right? And you say, well, what's wrong from being in Galilee? Well, there was this belief that no prophet arises from Galilee. And then, like we said last week, they bring up that, hey, isn't the Messiah supposed to be from the line of David? And isn't the Messiah supposed to be born in Bethlehem? Jesus is from Galilee. How can this be? And so there's all this confusion among the crowds. And then there's even confusion among the religious elite, among the religious officials. Because remember, the Pharisees sent people to do what? To arrest Jesus. So after Jesus teaches, they go back to the Pharisees. The arresting group goes back, and the people who sent him out are naturally like, well, guys, what's going on? Like, where's Jesus at? And in one of the most hilarious verses in this section is verse 46. So I want to read it to you. Here's what it says. The officers, that's the people who went to arrest Jesus. Here's what they respond. Here's how they respond to the people who ask him, well, where's Jesus at? What'd you do? Here's what they say. No one ever spoke like this man. Now, here's why it's hilarious to me. Because what are all of the people in this group? They're all teachers of the law. Like, they know the Old Testament verbatim, word for word, verse by verse. They've been teaching the law for decades, probably some of them. And these guys who were supposed to arrest Jesus come back and say, well, they say, no man's ever spoke like this. And what they should have added was, like all y'all. I mean, come on. It'd be like if you were doing whatever job you did for a living, if somebody came in and said, man, I've never seen anybody do a job like that person over there. You'd be like, but what about me? That's exactly how they felt. They become enraged. I mean, they accuse the arresting officers of being in league with Jesus. And then old Nicodemus, who we met way back in chapter 3, makes a logical point. And he simply says, hey, look, shouldn't we at least hear this guy out? They don't have nothing to do with Nicodemus. They're like, you too are a follower of, are you a Galilean as well? And like the whole crowd, from the people on the street to the arresting officers to the religious officials, they're all like, who is this guy? Like, they can't make up their mind. There's no consensus. And there's discussion about who all this guy is. Okay, and that's how chapter 7 ends. Now, I know some of you are wondering why we're skipping 7:53 through 8:11. Well, if you'll hang on and come back in about 3 weeks, we're going to talk just about that passage and why we're not talking about it today, because we're jumping to 8:12, okay? In verse 8:12, at a different time in the festival of booths, the last time we were on the great and last day, so we should assume this probably happens on the great and the last day, Jesus leans in to the second major ceremonial activity that happens at the festival of booths. So we're only going to read verse 12, and then we're going to talk about what all this means, because there's a lot packed in this one verse, okay? All right, so again, Jesus spoke to them. So what was the last thing he said? Hey, if you're thirsty, come to me and drink, and I will give you rivers of living water that will flow out of you. So again, Jesus spoke to them saying, so the crowd that's still there, I am, this is the second I am statement, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have light of life. All right, so let's stop. Now, because we've got to know the context for which this is said, because just like the water ceremony colors the water discussion of Jesus, so the light ceremony colors and gives us insight in this. So the second big ceremony that happened in Jerusalem during the Festival of Booths was an enormous light ceremony. So what they had in the temple, in the court, where Jesus is making this statement, is they have four enormous lampstands. I mean, enormous, that go up really, I don't know how high, but they go up very high. And each lampstand has four bowls. So it looks like a mini menorah. Do we know, you know, menorah has the center one, and then it has like three on each side. So there's like seven candles that go on top of it. But this one only has four. So it's like a lampstand, like a mini menorah. And there's four of these, okay? And there's these big dishes or bowls on the top that they fill with oil. And then they put wicks in, like these giant wicks, and they light them every night in the festival, okay? Or most nights in the festival. And when they light these things every night, I mean, people have to get up on ladders to light these. And there's 16, because there's four lamps, and there's four on each lamp. So four times four is 16. So there's 16, and they're strategically placed in this outer court of the temple area, the largest part of the temple area, which is where all the people are, which is where Jesus is in this moment. And these four lights, the teachers, or the people who lived back then who were teachers of the law, commented that there was so much light produced by these 16 candle-type things that it lit up the entire city of Jerusalem. Not only that, much like the water ceremony where people were dancing and singing and fever pitch, that same thing happens every time they light the lights. So there's people, you know, I mean, granted, I can imagine if this was at our house, we would catch things on fire, because people were given, kids, adults, had, like, it's like a candlelight service at Christmas now. Everybody had a little oil lamp or a candle, and they're dancing around. I mean, I can only see how that would go at our house. Woo, woo, right? You know, fire everywhere, you know. But that, I mean, like they were dancing in the streets, singing psalms, singing hymns. I mean, one author I said said that men, guys, that's us. Well, I hope most of us, men of good repute. So, you know, if you think you fit in that category, that's you. They would be dancing. We would all get together and we'd have some special dance that we would do. Maybe y'all, I'm not a great dancer, right? But anyway, and so there's dancing and singing and psalms being and literally light in the middle of the night. And they burn all night long. Now that may not seem like a grand thing for us, but take yourself back to when Jesus is alive. There's no electricity. So when it gets dark, it's dark. Like pitch black. Can't see your hand in front of your face. There's only been a couple times in my life where I have been, can't see my hand in front of my face dark. One of them was when I was hunting. I was probably in college, and so we have land. My dad has land in South Georgia, and so we were deer hunting, and I was in the woods that night. Like in the woods. And so if you're not familiar with hunting, it gets much darker in the woods than out of the woods because there's no moonlight. There's very little moonlight gets in the woods. And so it was dark, like you know, I mean, can't see. And I heard this hog come. Not a pig, but a hog. There's a difference, right? Pigs are nice and cuddly domesticated. Hogs, they might gore you to death, right? And so this hog comes and I hear him and it comes like, it's about time I'm needing to get down. And then I hear more shuffling. And so I immediately know this went from to bad. Because it's a mama hog, a sow, with like a dozen babies. And the babies are literally right at the bottom of my deer stand. And I can't see in my hand in front of my face. I'm like, what am I going to do? So I'm like, I don't have any rocks to like throw around or do anything. And so they've scurried off just enough so I was able to get down. Well, of course, when I started going down, I got to the bottom of the steps. I'm on the ground with them now. And they're like all in a circle around me. And I'm like, I mean, I look like, you know, Rambo. I look like Rambo in, you know, I'm like, and I was like, well, if they start running, I'm just ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. And then I'm going to make a run for it, right? Thankfully, they all scattered away, but it was so unnerving. I'd hunted that deer stand dozens of times. But that night, it was probably the darkest it had ever been in there. Couldn't see your hand in front of your face, and you got wild animals in front of you. And so for the authors who lived during that time to say that there was so much light that literally no corner in Jerusalem was darkened, can you imagine that? Can you imagine if you were from the country, out in the sticks like Jesus was? You've never seen anything like that before. When it was night, you were in the house going to bed. What else are you going to do? You can't do nothing else. No work stop. You can't see. You might have one itty-bitty oil lamp in your house that you kept lit all the time, but that's it. And so for this scenario, people are like going to stay because it's not only is there literal light at night, but it's symbolic for them as well. It's this whole festival of booths of the wilderness journey. And how did God guide their forefathers? By a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night, which put off immense light and goes on. It's symbolic of at the end times, again, of how when Christ would return, that God's light would shine forth in all the world, right? And so you have all of these symbolisms that come forward. But if you think about it, there's more than that going on because Jesus makes it personal, right? He doesn't just stop with, I am the light of the world. He goes into the whoever's, meaning me and you. And so it makes us, we have to think, okay, what is so significant about this I am the light part? Well, and as I was thinking about this week, I was thinking back to like put myself in Jesus' time. If you lived in Jesus' time, not only are you not accustomed to having light at night, but there's only two that I could think of. You can tell me afterwards if there's one more that I forgot. There's only really two sources of light that you have available to you. the sun and fire. That's it. You got the sun, and then you got a fire. Some type of fire, whether that be an oil lamp or a literal like wood-burning fire. That's all you got. And I thought, what do each of those produce? Well, the sun produces life, right? It photosynthesis, it helps things grow, it nourishes, it keeps you warm, it produces life. So what does a fire do? A fire, well, one, it purifies, right? It purifies. It's how you do metallurgy and like how you get fine gold and silver and bronze and all that. It also feeds you, right? It nourishes you. The product that it produces keeps you warm in the cold. And so in some sense, when Jesus says, I am the light of the world, he's bringing all of this, the symbolism from the Old Testament, the foreshadowing of the future, and the reality of the present into this picture that he's driving home. And in some sense, just like the water ceremony, he is absolutely saying that I am the fulfillment of everything going on in this moment. I am the light of the world. Then he goes on to say, whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Now you need to realize a couple things real quickly right here. He says, whoever follows me will not walk in darkness. What's the converse of that? Whoever doesn't follow me will walk in darkness. See, here's the thing you need to realize, ladies and gentlemen, this morning, is you and I do not possess light in ourselves. You might can create light, but you don't possess light. Think about it. You can go cut a tree down, chop the wood up, let it dry, and maybe at Christmas you can burn that wood and create light through a fire. You can go and you can be inventive like Edison was and create and use electricity to create light for light bulbs. But you don't possess light. You can't snap your fingers and light appear, can you? You don't possess it. I don't possess. What do we possess? The opposite of light. And what's that? Darkness. That's why nobody had to teach you how to lie as a kid. That's why nobody had to teach you how to cheat as a kid or be dishonest as a kid or not quite tell the whole truth. You told your side of the truth, but you didn't tell the whole truth because you didn't tell your siblings' side of the truth. Come on now. Y'all know what I'm talking about. If you have kids or grandkids, you know how it goes. You hear one side of the story, and then you talk to the other person involved to hear a completely different side of the story, and then you got to play judge and jury and advocate all at the same time, and maybe hope maybe one of them doesn't get mad at you for the rest of the day. Right? We don't possess light. Somebody has to bring light to us. Somebody has to bring good to us. Somebody has to bring holiness and righteousness in us and create that in us because we can't do it on our own. That's why Jesus has to say, whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Because what Jesus does is he exchanges our darkness for his light. And that's the only way that exchange can happen is if we truly are following after Jesus. I love that Jesus says that I am the light of the world, not I am bringing the light of the world or am bringing the light to the world, because it shows that Jesus possesses light. Think with me back to the Transfigurations episode or scene in the not in John's gospel but in the other three gospels, when Jesus takes Peter, James, and John all to the mount, up to this tall mount. The other disciples, the other nine, are kind of down at the bottom of the mountain. He takes those three up to the top, and Jesus, in kind of redneck vernacular, says, hey, I'm going to show y'all. Watch this. And he kind of unzips his humanity for a moment and lets just a slightly more of his divinity shine through. And it's so bright light that they literally can't look at it, and they have to fall down and worship because they can't literally. That's because Jesus possesses light. He's not just bringing it. He is it. So he is bringing it in himself. So he is the light. He's not bringing the light. So you and I have a choice, and this will kind of be, we'll kind of jump back into this here in a minute, but you and I have a choice. Do we just want to play it making light, or do we want to have it inside of us? And there's only one way for us to have it inside of us, and that's to whoever follows Jesus. Now look at what he says. Now, this is amazing. He says, whoever follows me will not walk in darkness. In other words, whenever you follow Jesus, it is absolutely life transformative for the rest of your life. Because he says, will not walk in darkness. In other words, meaning won't ever walk in darkness again. You say, well, Pastor, what's that mean? Will not ever walk in the way of the world again. Will not ever walk in the darkness of Satan again. Will not ever be bound by death, hell, the darkness of death, hell, and the grave again. Because that's not who you are anymore. So Jesus says, if you follow me, I am the light of the world, and I'm giving you my light. You don't own it. You don't possess it. I do, but I'm giving it to you, and you will not walk in darkness anymore, but will have the light of life. You say, well, what does that mean? Well, think back to the illustration we talked about a minute ago. What does the sun do? It nourishes. It warms. It grows things. Without the sun, we have no plant life. So in a very similar way, when Jesus comes into our life, what does it mean for Him? For us to have the light of life, His light of life in us, it means that He's going to grow and mature us and blossom us into the people we were always created to be. And just like the fire nourishes and warms our soul, so Jesus warms us physically. So Jesus, when we follow Him and He comes in and He's the light of our life, He nourishes and warms our soul. So listen to me, friends. I know we're digging in today, digging in right here. But whenever you're not feeling nourished in soul, whenever you're feeling hungry of soul, whenever you feel like you're not growing, who's at fault? Jesus or us? It's us every time, because Jesus is the light of life in us. And whenever we don't or aren't doing those things, it's because we have turned away and said, hey, I don't want that anymore. I want something else over here. Right? So Jesus says, whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Now, I want to draw your attention to one other verse, one other passage this morning, and it's Matthew chapter 5. Because in Matthew chapter 5, Jesus says these words. Okay? It's very, very interesting. You're going to say, but wait, Jesus just said something else. But in Matthew chapter 5, Jesus is talking to people like you and me. He's talking to people who want to follow after Him. He's talking to people who are His followers, who want to go after Him. This is the Sermon on the Mount, the very beginning, kind of toward the end. It's just right after the Beatitudes in the Sermon on the Mount. And so Jesus is telling His people, if you want to live in the kingdom, here's what it means. And so in Matthew chapter 5, here's what He says. He says, you are the light of the world. Now, wait a minute, Pastor. Jesus just said, I'm the light of the world. How can He say, speaking to us, those of us who want to live in the kingdom of God, want to follow, how can He now say, you are the light of the world? Well, hold on, let's keep reading. You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. Now, wait a minute, Pastor. You just said we don't have light. You only get light if you've got Jesus in your life. So what does that tell us? If we put these two passages together, Jesus says, you're walking in darkness, and if you want to walk in light, you've got to come to me. And when you come to me, you won't walk in darkness anymore, but you will have what? The light of life. And when you have the light of life, it shines in the world in which you live in, which is full of what? Darkness. And you will be like a city on a hill. And you will be like a lamp in a light in a house. And your light will shine in the darkness. And everyone else will see it. And they will wonder why you do, say, speak, pray, talk the way you do. And they will eventually, maybe, prayerfully, hopefully, desire to have what you have in your life. And so this is full tilt. This is what it looks like to move from darkness to shining bright, hot, white for Christ. And you got to go through the light of the world. You can't jump. This is like order of operations in math. You don't just get to do whatever you want to do and get the right answer. You know, you've got to move through the right way. And the way is, you've got to move through Jesus, and you've got to believe in Jesus. And when you're following Jesus, He gives you His light, and then you're able to shine in the world. Several years ago, this is probably before Holly and I even started dating. This is 20 years ago plus, maybe. We were riding to college. It was on a Wednesday night, and we commuted. I say we, me and two or three of my friends, because we were all in ministry at that time. I was in a church in Butler. They were at churches in Warner Robins. And so we would come home on Wednesday afternoon, go do our Wednesday church ministry stuff. We would meet back up at my mom and dad's house, and then we would all carpool back to Bruton Parker, which is in near Vidalia. And so that was our Wednesday. That was every Wednesday. So, you know, it was pedal to the metal, wide open. We were burning it at both ends. And so this particular Wednesday night, it was like no moon, and the road we're on is kind of a little bit elevated, and the land kind of sloped away from us, all, I mean, like miles and miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. And there's nothing out there. No street lights. It's just our headlights and the stars. And as you look to the right, and periodically, you could see little small towns. Pew, pew, pew. And the only reason you saw them is because all the light from the downtown city area, which, I mean, that's, I use that very loosely, small community, was all gathered in one place. And so in the midst of the darkness, you could see the light. And whenever I read this passage in Matthew 5, that's the image I always get. Because at your workplace, you probably are surrounded by people who don't love Jesus. And they're just living life the best they can. They don't know what true living's really like. Living with Christ in your life. And you may be the one person in that entire floor of your office, or in your school, or in your facility, or wherever you work at, your factory or whatever. You may be the one person who's there, who's the light. But don't ever think that you're not shining, because light always shines in the darkness, doesn't it? It doesn't take but one light to light up a room. And so the way you do that, you've got to follow Jesus. Jesus gives you His light, and you allow that light to shine, and you don't cover it up, and you don't hide it, but you put it in a place of prominence. You let that light shine, because that's the only way the darkness is expelled, is when we shine our good that God has given us. We didn't earn it. We don't have it on our own. But because Christ indwells us, we allow that to live out every day. I was watching an interview real quick, and we'll move on. I was watching an interview with a friend from like 12 years ago, maybe even 15 years ago. And I just talked with him just recently. And in those 12 years, that person's come to Christ rather recently in the 12 to 15 years. And got to see that person rather recently, and just the difference. They said the same words. Their voice was the same. They looked the same. They dressed reasonably the same. But the difference between the person's face between 12 years ago and today, vastly different. This person over here looked angry, mean, just ornery, ugly. They laughed, but even their laugh didn't look happy. This person over here had the most joyful, even though they were serious at times, you could still see there was something different in their eyes. I know that sounds crazy, but what is it? It's that event that happened that truly changed the course of their life, and that was them meeting Christ. And that person no longer exists. This new person is who lives is who they are now. And it's truly changed the direction of your life. And so Jesus says, I'm the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. And so part of the question we've got to ask ourselves today, and we didn't get anywhere today in this verse, we got to this one, and so we're going to cut it here. But here's the question we've got to all ask ourselves today, is do we want that in our lives? Right? Do we want that? And so I'll kind of feather that out into two realities. And then Pastor Adam's going to come and lead us. Invitation or response time is going to be a little bit different today. He's going to kind of play a song that I just want you to listen to, kind of reflect on what we've talked about today. And then he kind of gave you the preview of why we're doing it today, personally for him. But it really fits into where we're going with this, and that is, like, do you want this? And what I mean by that is in two realms. I don't know where you're. The only person I know who has a relationship with Christ is me. And so there may be somebody in here who's never experienced true forgiveness in the grace of Jesus and the love and the light that Jesus will put in your life when you come to Him, right? And so somebody may need to give their life to Jesus today. But here's the other reality. For those of us who have known Jesus and who are following Jesus, and we've been doing that for a while, we have the tendency to be comfortable with Jesus only shining His light in certain places in our life. Right? It's like, okay, well, Jesus, I'm okay with You getting this much, but like this area's over here, like, let's just let them be a little dim. That way I can kind of slide over here when I want to, and then when I need to, I can slide back into the light that You provide. And so a lot of us, if we're honest, to use this kind of metaphor, we got some dark crevices in our heart. And we've got some areas that we're real reluctant to shine, to allow Jesus' light to shine in. Because we know that if Jesus is light, because look, if you live with Jesus any length of time, you know that when He shines light in an area in your life, you have a decision to make. And that is either to be obedient or to not be obedient. And so we're reluctant to let Jesus shine in these little areas in our life because we intuitively know when that happens, we will be called to do something about it. And look at me, I'm no different than you. And we're reluctant to let Jesus shine into maybe this area of our marriage relationship or this area of our work relationship or this area of how we spend our time or what we spend our money on or the way we relate to people at work or the way we relate to our family members or our kids or our in-laws or some of y'all may see them as outlaws, whatever, right? But we're reluctant to let the light of the world truly be the light of the world in our life because we know that we're going to be called to task and we're going to be called to give an account for that and we're going to have to make a decision. And so we've just kind of said, well, if I don't let Jesus in that area, then I won't ever have to do nothing about it. But what does that mean? That means on this side that we're kind of, it's like we've got a lampshade over our light. You know, lampshades look good in your house and, you know, you might need them in certain scenarios. But whenever we don't allow Christ's light to shine completely into every dark crevice of our life, it's like we're putting a lampshade over our light in the world, in the places that we enter into in our areas of influence. And so we're dimming the light that Christ has in us. So really today, we've all got to make. So Pastor Adam's going to come up. He's going to lead us in kind of a song of reflection, and then we'll have a kind of our traditional altar call kind of thing. But really the question we've got to walk away here today with is, what do you want? Do you want Jesus' light to shine in you and through you or not? Do you want Jesus' light to shine even in the pieces of your heart that you are thinking of right now that you don't want Him in? And I don't know what that looks like for you. But let me encourage you. The light may hurt. It may be like blinding at times, like when you go outside after being in a dark room. But it is so much better than living in the darkness. There is so much more joy and happiness and goodness and holiness and righteousness by letting Jesus fully shine in every area of your life. Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.